That song we were singing before, Forbid It, Lord, That I Should Boast. I mean, who on earth could boast, honestly? I was thinking about it when we were singing that song, even on one of my very best days where I feel like I'm kicking pretty straight. I seem to have a habit of kicking it out on the fall. I'm not talking about playing footy. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, brave person to boast. You know you like only you know you, and I don't know, looking around the room, I would imagine that there would be some folks here, for example, that are worried about something. Maybe the echoes of Jesus, hey, don't worry, it's all good, you know, I've got you, and yet you're still stuck worrying about something. Well, good news, spoiler alert, the last page of this book, I have read it, and we are on the winning team. Stop it. We're on the winning team. God's plans and purposes will prevail. Problem here, though, that verse from Proverbs, it's got like a little front bit too. Many are the plans in a person's heart, but by contrast, it's God's plans that will prevail. And I want to try and unpack how can I sort of, you know, figure out if the plans that I have in my heart, your plans maybe in your heart, are God's plans. Because one way for sure you're going to shank it out on the full is if those two things aren't matched. That's for sure. I remember when I fell in love with Jesus, I read the brochure and it was filled with hope and joy and all those sorts of things. What I didn't notice in the brochure is that following Christ is a contact sport. It really is. And if you've been following Christ long enough, you'll know. It's a contact sport. Yes, it's joyful. There is peace. But there is contact as well. And I think trying to figure out this as the plans in my heart, God's plans, is part of that sort of contact sport. It's not an easy thing necessarily to unpack. And I guess that's what I want to try and focus on, maybe using the book of Nehemiah chapter 2 as an example of, I think, somebody that managed those two things really, really well. I think it is safe to say that Nehemiah, certainly in chapter 2 as we see it here, found the centre of God's plans and purpose. Certainly for Israel and I think for himself. And I think his plans and purposes line themselves beautifully with God's plans and purposes for Israel. When I was reading through the book of Nehemiah, I haven't read it for a long time. You know, I noticed a couple of things. I don't know if you read the Bible very slowly sometimes, and maybe just ask God to sort of highlight things, like put a little spotlight on a verse or two, or even a phrase. And you don't need to look at it, but one of the phrases that popped up, or words actually, were firstly in Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 3, where they said to me that those who survived the exile are back in the province. They're in great trouble and disgrace. That little word, disgrace. I went, oh, it's an interesting word, because it pops up again in our text here that we're looking at this morning in chapter 2. That little word, disgrace. Come, let us rebuild the wall, Nehemiah says to the crew. Get your tools out. Let's do it. I also told them about the precious hand of God that was on me. And the reason we're going to do it, folks, is so that we won't be in disgrace. And I wonder why they're in disgrace. Why is it that just having a sort of a wall around the city broken down a disgrace for God's people? It really goes back to the fact that, well, in those days, a wall was a sign or a symbol, if you like, of the very presence and the protection of God. And something happened when they were dragged into exile. You mentioned the exile, Josh. Something happened when they were dragged into exile. It appeared to God's people. And if you look at Deuteronomy and look at the sort of the commentary through that exile period, it appeared to them anyway that Yahweh had been defeated by the gods of Babylon. That was a disgrace. And for the people who loved the name of God, that was a disgrace. So they're very, very keen to rebuild that wall, rebuild that sense of God's presence and protection here. So God's passionate about those plans and purposes, and Nehemiah tapped into that, and he became very passionate, obviously, with those plans as well. I guess from here on in, though, I'm going to be working on a premise. So I just sort of, you know, tip my hand right off the bat what the premise is. I'm going to assume that for the majority of us here, we actually believe that God still has plans and purposes for this world. I think that'd be, you know, a lock-in. For those who used to play cards, a lay-down sort of mazare, if you like. That God's still got plans and purpose for the world. Although, for some of you, maybe you're thinking, I may be not so convinced that I'm part of those plans and purposes for his life and his purposes in this world. Maybe you're too old. You think, you know what? He doesn't need me. I remember Margarita's probably live streaming, watching this. Hello, Mum. Shout out to Mum. Dad's here, he's looking at me, thinking, oh my goodness me, what's the young fella going to say? I could say anything, Basra, I haven't got hardly any notes. Behave. Well, I remember Mum telling me, what time do I have to knock off, Josh? Just so I can pull a handbrake at a certain... Oh. I remember Mum coming home, she was sort of acting vice principal and, a teacher at Ivanhoe Grammar Girls School. And I remember they got Desmond Tutu out there. I remember Mum telling me a little story that he told on the stage. And I've heard him tell it in other contexts too. And you might have heard it. He told the story, now I'm just freestyling here, so I'll see if I can get it mostly right. He told the story of a party in heaven. It was like a reunion when Jesus returned to heaven. And Jesus walks in and all the lights are out. Hello? Anyone home? And suddenly, you know, the angels and God the Father switch the lights on. Hey, surprise, we're here. He's high-fiving, walking around. It's all good. But there's one person. Everyone's grinning except one little angel way up the back. Why are you frowning like this? Not at all happy. So Jesus sort of strides on up. There you going, buddy? What's up? Don't look too happy. He says, oh, no, don't get me wrong, Jesus. I'm thrilled. What you accomplished on it, amazing, absolutely amazing. I'm really happy to see you back. It's awesome. All right, well, why the, you know, sad face? Why the long face? He says, oh, I'm really a little bit worried about the people you left in charge. You managed all right, but, I mean, look at that lot. There's Nancy. Look at her. Betty next to her. Do they still heckle here? Yeah, good. I mean, look at that lot. Even when they sort of playing a good game, they've got a habit of kicking it out on the full. Oh, I don't know. No, I'm worried. And then Jesus, you know, encouraged him, don't worry, they've given them the Holy Spirit, so they're not entirely on their own. But the reality is, Jesus said to this little angel, that they are my hands now that I'm not there. They are my feet to go. They are the voice that can welcome, you know, a grade five going through what Linda was going through into a classroom. They're my voice. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to hand pass the footy to them. Now, I actually believe that. That's a make-up story, obviously. But I actually believe that God's got plans and purposes still for this world, obviously, but I actually believe that there is not a single person here or at home, including you, Mum, that can't be part of those plans and purposes. But how on earth do you figure that out? Well, Nehemiah did. And I'm absolutely convinced that you can too. We're on the winning team, and I don't think Jesus is interested in making it terribly difficult for you to figure out your part in his plans and purposes. I don't think he's, you know, keen to hide it too much. Maybe he's pretty pragmatic about getting things done when it comes to achieving his plans and purposes. So that's the premise I'm working on, just so you're up front. If you're just sitting there going, nah, he's done it all, he's not doing anything more, he's sort of wound up the world, he let it go, and I'm not part of anything, I don't need, you know, I'll just go and live my life, well, have a nap. The rest of us, we've got some work to do. We'll chat. But figuring out your part in it, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. We've got a tendency to sort of fall into one or two camps. Let me illustrate this. We've got plenty of time. We'll get into the book of Nehemiah. Let's face it, you've read it 150,000 times. We'll get there. We've got a tendency to fall in one or two categories, every single one of us in here. And maybe I'll take a vote after I've told this story and see which category you might fall into. So Youth Dimension, when Mandy and I started Youth Dimension, I think Indiana there, Mandy and I, we were sharing a 1988 twin cab Nissan Navara four-wheel drive. And we were sort of driving around, three of us. And YD tapped me on the shoulder and I was pastoring a church. And they said, we want you to think and pray through, you know, maybe coming over and heading up Youth Dimension. So we talked for a while and I wasn't at all interested, actually, loving the pastoring role. So I sort of threw a few things out there and I said, oh, well, look, you know, if we ever did, we'd need a car. Just practical. We need a car. Sharing this one. They said, oh, well, no, we can't afford to go and buy a car. I said, I didn't say like a new car. They said, we can't get a new car. I said, any car, anything that rolls. That's right. So we dragged out of the shed this old Honda, beautiful little car, and I sort of rebuilt the engine and got it going. It was a gift to Youth Dimension 18 years ago. This happened this year. Anyway, long story, the Youth Dimension vehicle needed a roadworthy. The roadworthy said, you got about $3,500 worth of stuff to do, and we didn't have that money to do that. So we had to get rid of the YD car, and of course we had to replace it. Now, Youth Dimension's sponsored by folks like you. You know, we don't, you know, the government doesn't give us X, Y, and Z. It's friends and family that sponsor the work of Youth Dimension. So we sort of didn't have the money to go out and replace the vehicle. So I said to Mandy, all right, forget about it. I'm not even hardly going to pray about this one. It's obvious to me. Pop out a kidney, make a little bit of money for us, and let's you and me we'll just buy a car. We'll talk to YD. We'll just get another little car. We'll remortgage the house for the 15 millionth time. We'll do whatever it takes. So Mandy, you know, just sort of smiled. I don't know that I gave her an option. So off I went, right, sleeves up, got, you know, found a little car, negotiated with the guy, just about to go and buy this little car. And then Mandy said to me, look, Linz, why don't you stop for a minute, make a little bit of room for God to do something. I said, there's no need. There's no need at all. I've got it all sorted. And then, you know, carrying on a little bit. And then Grasshopper, Indy, my son, came up. He said, no, I don't know, Dad. It's confession time. I've got two of the staff here seeing the, you know, the under the bonnet lens. Indy came up and said, oh, I don't know, Dad. I think, you know, Mum might be onto something here. Why don't you just make a little bit of space for God to do something? Fine. All right. I'll give him 24 hours. I'll just stop. I'm thinking I've got it all sorted anyway. But I'll just stop. I'll give God 24 hours. So on the Monday, that was Sunday night, on the Monday I sent a little newsletter out to all of our sort of, you know, 1,800 Youth Dimension people. And I said, listen, the YD car's blowing up. I'd just like you to pray for wisdom as to where to go from here. And I didn't ask for another car, I just said wisdom, because in my mind I've got it all figured out. Just wisdom. That was the Monday. Monday lunchtime it went up. 12 hours later, I'm driving up to get the sushi, just about to go and buy this car I'd sorted out, and I get a phone call. How you going, Linz? All right. Hey, listen, every couple of years we trade in our Ford Everest. And I saw your little post come out. And maybe you can have the one we're driving now. Absolutely stunned. It didn't take him 24 hours. 12 hours. So I said, What colour is it? No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I'm not that bad. 12 hours making room for God. See, we've got a tendency now, you know, it's not rocket science. Some of us will say, you know what, God, I got this one. Roll our sleeves up. I figure I know your plans and purposes. It's all right, I got it. I'll take it from here. And away we go. Doesn't take us much. We don't need much of a shove. Others, though, and one's not right or wrong. We'll talk about it in a minute. But others of us, though, will say, you know what, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to, you know, let God do his thing. There's those two extremes. Obviously, it'll mix in. But generally speaking, would you agree? I think you would. That you, in your wild state, you know, out in the wilderness, probably have a tendency for one or the other. I always felt Nehemiah was a little bit like me in that, just the roll the sleeves up sort of guy, and I got this one. That was my impression from a distance. I mean, when you read about, you know, what we read here, it was like next minute he's organised timber from the forest for the gates. He's got a ticket, you know, to get his way through. He's done a little bit of a recon on the wall. He didn't tell anyone about that. No one needs to know just yet. That not the nobles, not the Jews, not the priests. Nobody needs to know. I'll just get on the old horse and we'll go. And then when the horse couldn't get through because the walls were, you know, broken so badly, he says, I don't even need a horse. I've got a can-do attitude and a pair of boots. I'm on. And off he went. He does this recon it at night. And then he sits down in verse, you know, 17. And he rallies the troops. You know, then I said to them, well, you see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. Its gates have been burned with fire. And that's a disgrace because as far as that just screams to everybody that Yahweh has been defeated and remains defeated. Well, that's not true. That's a disgrace. We need to rebuild this. And then they get busy rebuilding. Now, does anyone know how long it took them to sort of rebuild the majority of it, get most of the work done? I can answer that. 52 days thereabouts. Not long. I always from a distance figured Nehemiah was one of those sort of, you know, roll the sleeves up, get the job done sort of guys. So if I was to say, you know, where does he sit? Is he, no, I'm just going to let go and let God here. Or, it's all right, God got this one. It's like me. Don't worry, Lord. I'm not even going to bother you or your people about the car. I'll sort it. I mean, we've got a tendency, one or the other. I don't know what yours is. I'm not going to ask you. I won't get you to put your hand up. And I always thought Nehemiah was a little bit like that. But it's not true. Like, I don't think that's true. Like I said though, before you burst into tears, run out of the room, I don't think any one of those is right or wrong. I think they have strengths, depending on the context. Sometimes, you know, waiting is not particularly the most wise thing. Other times it is. You've got to figure out the context. I was talking to somebody about, oh, well, which one, you know, I was telling them about the car and, you know, which one, you know, is the better one, I guess, or, you know, which is the right way to be, let go, let God, or, you know, get in there. And how do I figure it out? Myself, personally, how do you figure it out, Josh? What's the context here? What do I do? Because some of you are worried about things right now, I know for sure you are. I know for sure you're worried about all sorts of things. And maybe you're actually starting to think, well, you know, what are God's plans and purposes on this particular thing that I'm worried sick about? And, you know, what's my role? Yeah, I want to be your hands and feet, Lord. What's my role in this? Is it to wait and give you space, you know, to do something in this particular area of concern in my life? You know, Lord, or are you sort of, you know, nudging me to, you know, get going? How do you figure that stuff out? I was very surprised when Uncle Alistair, when Angie and I, who was here, just thinking of this, when we were taught to water ski, we went from two skis to one. I don't know if you've ever tried that. Like, it's good. And I remember Uncle Alistair in the boat. He said, "Oh, let's have a crack at the single ski."
Oh, yeah.
Why would you stay on two skis when you can ski on one? Looks much cooler. So he got us up. I don't know if you remember this, Ange. He got us to stand both feet together like this. Okay. Maybe he's got mind reading powers. What's he going to do? He came up behind us and he's, jibber, jibber, jibber. And then he shoved us like this. And we went like that. And he said, that's your dominant leg. I was like, okay. That's the leg when you single ski, apparently. Memory serves me right, to quote Iron Chef. That's the one that you have in front. But you've got to figure that out. What's your dominant leg? Before you can sort of allocate it, to the right spot in the ski. So how do I figure out this area of concern that you're worried about and, what's my action? Where's God nudging me? Wait, or is it, go for gold? Often, because he's not just interested in getting whatever it is you're worried sorted out, he's also interested as part of his plans and purposes about your character. You're growing. And what I've discovered, I have been coming here a while, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then we're off and Betty kept coming and still here. We've been here a while. I've discovered in all of that time that the Lord tends to nudge me against my natural tendencies. If the Lord's going to sort of encourage me to grow, he often, not always, but often says, just wait. It's like through the voice of my lovely wife and son. Why don't you make a little bit of space for God to do something, Lynn? This is where God tends to nudge me when I'm confronting a problem. Because I'm very, my wild state is, that's right, Jesus, sit down, relax, I got it. And off I go. So I don't know what it is that, the Lord's encouraging you to do about the very thing right now that you're worried about. But he's also interested in stretching and growing you. And often he'll be nudging you, if you're looking for his direction in this, against your natural tendency. If the most comfortable spot for you is to say, you know what, I'm not going to do anything here, I'm just going to let go and let God do his thing, then the Lord might be nudging you. It's go time. Get the tickets, get the timber. Take the recon and get the crew ready. Let's build. But if you're already up the wall doing the recon, got the tickets, whittled the timber out of the King's Forest with your bare teeth and you're ready to roll, he might actually be saying, well, easy. Just back it off, big fella, maybe. Just let's wait a minute and make some room for me to do something. I think Nehemiah got the balance, though. I don't think he's the person that I thought he was. Because I sort of resonated with, the go-to, get amongst them. And I always thought Nehemiah was like, I don't think he's like that. The reason is because when I was reading through chapter 1 in preparation for reading, this wonderful stuff that Nehemiah did, and it's not rocket science, the story. But in reading there, I noticed the real estate. Have you noticed? You did chapter 1, you probably did. But the first thing that struck out was the real estate in chapter 1 given to Nehemiah's prayer. Like, essentially, that's chapter 1. And although it's a very short prayer, which does resonate with me, when the king said, hey, buddy, like, cheer up. You're harsh in the buzz here in the palace. What's the matter? And he knew, this was very risky, but in chapter 2, verses 10, in verse 4, sorry, the king said to me, what is it that you want? Well, then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king. That's got to be a pretty quick prayer, don't you reckon? Like, I like those. Problem, all right, Lord, He probably just thought it was just like that, and then he answered one of those sort of prayers. Which I like those prayers. They don't slow me down. That's not right. Nehemiah had soaked himself in prayer and communion with his God. It was a habit for this man, day in, day out, soaking in the presence of God. This little sort of prayer registered here is just sort of tapping a rich vein of time and intimacy with his God. And from there, he understands when it's go time. So I think he gets the balance right, waiting on God, letting go, letting God, just spending time in his presence with, you know, it's go time. So many of the plans in a person's heart, you got plans, I know you got plans, but it's God's purposes that prevail. Why kick for another team? Why not just say, okay, I want God's plans and his purposes, you know, in my life, and I want to work towards winning that with Christ. I've got three little statements or questions here. Let me just like, what's his plans for your life? Like seriously, do you know? I'm not necessarily talking about the flight path all the way to heaven. I don't think Jesus seems to sort of lay that out for us. Often it's just, what's his plans and purposes for your next step, do you know? Where's he sort of encouraging you? Where is he nudging you? What's your next step? What are his plans for your life, for your next step, do you know? I wonder what plans are in your heart right now. So I don't know what God's plans are. Well, what are your plans in your heart? What's ticking away? What, you know, what's your to-do list? And I guess the next one's a pretty obvious one. Do they align? Like, do they match up? There's no doubt. It was beautifully read. There was a lot of names in there, and I'm so glad that you read that chapter 2 for us. A lot of names in there. I'm going, oh, my goodness me. But when we read through this, it's abundantly clear that God's plans and purposes to be a light to the Gentiles included rebuilding this wall, restoring the sense of his presence and protection amongst his people, removing their disgrace, the disgrace that others were directing really at his people, but certainly at his name. And it seems that Nehemiah's passion was well aligned with fulfilling those plans and purposes. But what about you? What about you? Well, I guess the clue might be obviously soaking in prayer. I mean, it's a cliche, and a lot of stuff that we preach about sort of rolls back around to the same sorts of things. But spending time with God in prayer, reconnecting with him. I mean, do you do it? Or is your prayer life like that little verse 4? It's just a bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, to the Lord as you travel through life. Or do you carve out some time where you're just soaking in his presence? I mean, how much real estate are you giving? Am I giving, you know, to God in prayer? Because I think out of there comes a sense of what his plans and purposes are for you. And you'll sense the nudge. Hey, it's time just to, you know, let go and let God lens. Praise be to Jesus that despite me just going like this, my lovely wife and son were able to nudge me, you know, on behalf of Jesus, let's say, and say, Lens, why don't you just stop, make some room for God. Maybe that's his call to you. Make some room for me. Just like stop. Make some room. Maybe you've been, oh, it's a little harsh, using that as an excuse. Because maybe you sort of know the action that you need to take. Oh, just let God do that. If God manages all those multitude of circumstances, okay, for you, Lord. Maybe the nudge there is, no, you need to take a step. You need to act. I don't know. thank you for inviting me to come and chat to you, really, because I've been able to see Nehemiah differently than I ever have before. I don't know which category of person. I remember Rob Willett's son. Remember Jeff? Does anyone know Jeff Willett? You know Jeff Willett. I remember when I was delivering pizzas at Watsonia there, and I was studying Bible college, doing this, that, and the next thing, and we would deliver pizzas at Frank's. What was the name of the place? It doesn't matter. Who? Pedro's Pizzas in Watsonia. And we'd sort of knock off at 2 a.m, and then I'd go and, you know, fall asleep, and then go out and build an aeroplane engine. That doesn't sound too good, just like that, does it? And then go and do something else, and then run back and try and start at Pedro's Pizzas. And I remember Jeff seeing me come, you know, running out with a box of pizzas from time to time. And I remember this one time he was tidying up his butcher shop there in Watsonia, and he came out and he said, "You're busting your buns here, Lens. Like, seriously. Like, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, you know, I've got things I've got to pay for. This is what I'm doing, delivering pizzas." He said, "I'll tell you what, I've got an idea for you, Lens. Why don't you not do this so much and just let me sponsor some of your, you know, ministry and the work that you're doing?" You know what I said? No need, mate. I got this. Literally. It's no need. He never from that day on sponsored me a cent. I remember it clear as a bell, standing on the side, big thing. "It's all right, mate. No, it's all good. I got this." It took probably 8 years for the Lord to deconstruct that attitude. You're laughing at me. Some of you have got it in this room. Oh, you're looking at me going, "Yeah, I wouldn't give you another cent either, Lins." It took me 8 years to figure out, you know what? Actually receiving from God's people is an act of humility and a constant reminder of God's provision to you, Lins. That's how he sort of got through. It took him 8 years. I'm worthy adversary. Don't be like me. Some of you are like that. "Oh, I got it, God, I don't need you here." Although some of you might be saying, "You know what? Well, thank goodness he's not asking me to do anything, because I'm just letting go and letting God." Well, I'm going to point at you. my prayer, and I'll pray and I'll stop talking. My prayer is that still small voice of God, the same God that directed Nehemiah into his plans and purposes, would take your heart and your passions, your natural tendencies, and align those with his plans and purposes. Make that clear to you how he's sort of figuring out. That's my prayer, you know, as we knock off. So let me pray, and then. So Lord, thank you for Nehemiah. Thank you for a man clearly immersed in a rich and intimate prayer life with you. But Lord, thank you for his willingness once getting a deep sense of what your plans and purposes for your people and your city there in Jerusalem was. And Lord, thank you that he did roll his sleeves up. Thank you for his pragmatic way of fulfilling your plans and purposes, the skill in which he did it, those natural tendencies and talents that he clearly had as a leader. Lord, thank you for those, that he put those faithfully into action to rebuild that. But Lord, for the rest of us, you know, we're here. We do believe you're still at work in the world, Lord. You have plans and purposes. And that world, not just the world out there, but the world, you know, within a 9-iron shot of every single one of us, Lord. That world, you've got plans and purposes for. You've got them for our friends, for people in our family. You've got plans and purposes for the people that we meet at work, Lord, that come across our path. Lord, we want to be a part of those plans and purposes. And in doing so, Lord, we believe that we'll fulfill your plans and purposes for our life as well. So, Lord, I pray for these dear folks, for us all, actually. Lord, show us how our heart and passions and tendencies can be brought into line with your plans and purposes, whatever those are for us. Lord, encourage those who are willing just real quick to let it go and maybe a little bit nervous to take action, Lord. Just gently with your Spirit, Lord, just encourage them. Show them what the next step is. Encourage them to take it. For those of us who can run ahead of your plans and purpose, Lord, sort of think we've got it all figured out and maybe need to just sort of stop for a minute and make a little bit of space for you, as scary as that might be, because maybe the job won't get done. Lord, just encourage us right now to do that if it's needed. Amen.